Okay, welcome in everybody to episode 2 of the Beast Lore podcast. I'm your host, Jack Daly. Today we're going to be talking about theories of Bigfoot. I'm basically just going to be going over some of the main theories that have been put forth to try and explain what Bigfoot is, why this phenomenon has been cited all over the world. Basically just going to be going over kind of some of the different theories that have been put forth to explain this phenomenon. So, you know, Bigfoot is a creature that I've been very interested in for many, many years now, and I've been studying it quite extensively. So I've put a lot of thought into this, and I'm really excited to talk about it. So the episode should be pretty fascinating. And as last episode about werewolves was organized chronologically, this episode will be more organized thematically based on the different theories themselves. So listen in, it should be very enjoyable. First off, I want to give a little bit of some biographical information about myself, just so you as a listener can get kind of comfortable with who I am, sort of get kind of a view of, you know, where I've been and what I've experienced. So, you know, obviously my name's Jack Daly. I grew up in a small mountain town called Evergreen in Colorado. I went to the University of Kansas for college. While I was there, I studied history and English, got bachelor's degrees in both of those, and I also minored in anthropology. I focused on archaeology and biological anthropology within that field of study. So biological anthropology has a lot to do really with Bigfoot. So while I was studying that, I kind of took an interest in, you know, the ancient hominids and sort of like the ape ancestors of man. That, well, that's one of the theories of what Bigfoot is, but I'll get into that more later. As you know, currently I'm a student at Utah State University, graduate student getting my master's in folklore. After I graduated college, I had a couple of years where I was just kind of working random jobs, but primarily I was writing science fiction novels, and both of those, I finished two novels, and they're both available on Amazon. One is called The Twin Dragons of Azeron, and the other is called The Three Sons of Azeron. I'm currently working on a third book called Convergent Timelines, and that should be done within the next, you know, I don't know, 6 months or a year or so. So, you know, that's kind of a little bit of background about who I am. Before I get into a lot of different stuff about Bigfoot itself, I want to tell you guys about a couple of encounters that I've actually had. Well, I wouldn't really call them encounters. I've never physically seen Bigfoot. I haven't had what's called a Class A encounter, which is when you actually see them. But I've had two kind of weird experiences, I guess I would call them, experiences more than encounters, that are something that things that kind of get reported at times in conjunction with Bigfoot sightings. So the first one was when I was 16 years old. I was with my friend in the neighborhood that I grew up in. It was late at night during the summer. It was probably June or July, but we were kind of just out for just a walk at night. And, you know, I grew up in a mountain town, so I grew up in kind of a foresty sort of kind of rural area. It wasn't really rural, but there was a large meadow next to my house, and my friend and I walked out to a little cul-de-sac that basically opened up into this meadow. And up in the sky, we saw this large blue orb that was sort of jutting around in the sky, hopping from one place to another. And we couldn't make sense of what it was. I've never seen anything like it. It definitely wasn't anything like a projected light or anything like that, I don't think. Generally, that's not the type of thing that you would see in the sky in my town, because, like I said, it was a small town. There wasn't a lot of light shows going on or anything like that. And oftentimes, in conjunction with these Bigfoot sightings, you'll hear people talk about seeing these blue orbs. They're typically white orbs or blue orbs, but for whatever reason, some people will see a Bigfoot, and then almost simultaneously or in the same sort of time frame, they'll also see this blue orb. So that's one of the more sort of paranormal theories about Bigfoot, is that somehow they're manipulating the quantum field and are turning into balls of light or something like that. And so I've actually seen these blue lights, and you can look them up on the internet. And, you know, I still don't have an explanation for what happened. And I mean, it wasn't a Bigfoot sighting that I was having or anything like that, but we saw this blue light, and then at the end of it, it just kind of disappeared. Well, it didn't really disappear. It like flew off into the sky and then disappeared. So that was kind of weird. And then another sort of, you know, questionable experience that I had was in Colorado. There's a place called Wellington Lake, and there's been a lot of Bigfoot sightings at this place. You can actually look up on BFRO.net. You can look up different sightings in all of the states in the United States, and I'm pretty sure it actually stretches well beyond that into other countries, other continents throughout the world. And Lake Wellington had some of these sightings, so I decided to drive out there. And it was about an hour away from where I lived. And the first time I went out there, basically you turn off the highway in this town called Bailey. And it's kind of funny because the turnoff to where you go to Lake Wellington, Wellington Lake, is right across the street from a Bigfoot museum, which is also a really cool place. So if you're in Bailey, I would recommend popping by that museum. And basically you drive down this road for quite a while, that it really seems like it's going to nowhere. It's a very pretty place. You drive by, you know, rivers and really cool mountain scenery, but eventually it turns into a dirt road, and it seems like basically you're going to nowhere. And so I drove down this road for a while, and I basically was like, you know what? I don't think that this is really taking me anywhere, so I'm just going to turn around. And I turned around, and I parked my car, and I hiked around this just kind of random area for a while. But I had a really sort of eerie feeling while I was there the entire time. I felt like something was aware of my presence, and at the same time that something was kind of drawing me in there. So that was the first time I drove out there. And then probably a month later, my dad and I decided to drive back out there, and we just kept on going down that dirt road, and eventually we got to the lake. So I was on the right road the first time, but I didn't know that it was going to be about a 30 or 45 minute drive down this road that seemingly went to nowhere. And this was in October of probably 2016 it was, and there was hardly anybody at the lake. You have to check into a counter and pay to be there in the first place. So I mean, if other people were there, you knew they were there, and there was only I think one or two other cars that were even there. And we basically started hiking back into just like this kind of random area towards the back of the lake itself. And right when we got there, we smelled this really pungent, really weird smell. I don't even know quite how to describe it. It was almost like a wet dog, but like even mustier, and it just filled the air completely. So that was weird. And we kept on walking for quite a while until we went off the path, and we found an area with a bunch of chunks of quartz, and we decided to do a couple of tree knocks while we were there. And that's one thing that some Bigfoot researchers will do is try and knock on trees, because that's you need to have opposable thumbs to grasp a piece of wood and knock with it. So that's primate behavior, and you're trying to elicit a response. We didn't get a response back, but basically we kept on climbing up towards this very large like rock structure. Oh, and that's another thing, is that right beyond where we did the tree knocks, there's like a gigantic cave system that went on for miles, it seemed like. And that was kind of weird. I mean, definitely, you know, some kind of creature could have made a living in there. Probably bears, but I don't know. And we hiked around for a while, and then we got kind of lost, and we looped around, and I paused at one point to tie my shoe, and my dad was like, "Hey, isn't this where we did the tree knock?" And I was like, "No, that was way far away from here. We're not even close to that." But then I looked up, and the tree that I had done the knock on, which was it was like broken down, it looked like maybe it had been struck by lightning, was right there. So it was where we had done this knock. And then I looked down again, and the quartz rocks that we had seen earlier were arranged in basically a straight line, which was not how they were before. And there was nobody else at that part of the mountain with us. So I don't really know what was going on, but as far as I could tell, something had arranged those quartz crystals. And it was just weird that we ended up in the same position as we were before. I mean, that could have just been a coincidence, but we got lost, and we didn't think that that's where we were. So basically that's that part of the story. But then I actually ended up going back to Lake Wellington about a year later by myself, and I was trying to find this cave system again, and I was climbing up the mountain quite a ways, and at one point I started feeling very, very dizzy and almost like sick. I started basically hyperventilating, and I was almost overcome with this just really weird feeling. And I kept on hiking up, and I couldn't find the place I was looking for. I got to the end of the trail, but once I got to the end of the trail, I realized that the place that I was actually looking for was where I started feeling so weird. So I turned around and went back down there, and sure enough, exactly where I started hyperventilating was the cutoff that I needed to take that was unmarked. It wasn't actually a trail. And so, I don't know. That's another thing that sometimes gets reported with Bigfoot sightings, is that people start feeling very weird, almost like they're ill, and that there's something is aware of their presence. So that's my little Bigfoot story. Definitely doesn't prove the existence of Bigfoot, but that's the experience that I have to talk about. Okay, so let's get into the actual discussion itself about theories of Bigfoot. One thing that you have to understand about Bigfoot is that there's basically a spectrum of belief for what Bigfoot is. On one side, there's the purely biological school of belief. So these are people that, if they believe in Bigfoot, they think that it's a purely biological entity, that it's some kind of ape or hominid creature. There's nothing weird about it. It's something that exists completely on the physical and material plane. This is very easy to understand, because basically everything, all the creatures on Earth that we know about exist in this way. So that's kind of an obvious interpretation of what it is. On the other hand, there's the paranormal side. This side of belief thinks that Bigfoot is a creature that operates on a level that is not quite to our understanding, doesn't really fit into what we know about the physical world. And some people think that maybe it's like an alien, or that it's some kind of interdimensional shapeshifter. So those are the basic two sides of the argument. And then in between is a whole range of theories that kind of fit somewhere along that spectrum. And another misconception about Bigfoot is that some people that really haven't researched the topic that far think that there's one Bigfoot and that this is like the Loch Ness Monster. There's one of them and it's just out in the woods running around somewhere. And that's definitely not the case. If Bigfoot exists, there's a lot of Bigfoot. There's more than just one. And part of the reason why this is evident is that there are Bigfoot sightings all across the world. They are actually a highly varied descriptions of what these Bigfoot-like creatures are. So in North America, we have basically two different types, which is the Sasquatch and the skunk ape. The Sasquatch is basically what you think of it on the typical description of Bigfoot, somewhere between 6 to 8 feet tall, somewhere around 600 pounds in weight. Very large feet obviously is the determining factor for a Bigfoot. And that's typically in the Pacific Northwest, in the Rocky Mountains, throughout California, in the Northeast, and in like the Appalachian areas. Those are basically the types of creatures that we're dealing with. But within that, there's a lot of different types of Sasquatches that have been reported also. In Kentucky, there's the Wild Man. There's the Ohio Grassman. There's the Yahoo, which is typically in West Virginia. There's the Stonish Giant and the Dustman, the Cherokee Devil. Those are just some types of basically the Sasquatches that exist in the folklore of the United States. And there's much more than that, but to give you an idea, it's actually probably more varied than you would think. And the skunk ape is typically exists in the swamps of the southeastern United States, Florida, I think Louisiana. Basically, this creature is a little bit smaller than the Pacific Northwest or Appalachian Rocky Mountain Sasquatch. It's typically reported to have a little bit reddish fur. I think it looks probably more like an orangutan, and maybe that's what it actually is. But that's essentially those are the two types of Sasquatches we're dealing with in the United States, at least. And I mean, definitely there's a lot of Sasquatch sightings up in Canada as well. Some of the other more prominent Bigfoot type creatures that are reported to exist are the Alma. The Alma lives in the Caucasus Mountains of Central Asia and the Altai Mountains of Southern Mongolia, reportedly. Usually it's reported as being 5 to 6 feet tall, so it's a little bit smaller than the North American Sasquatch. There's also the Himalayan Yeti, which is also known as the Abominable Snowman, and that's about the same size as the North American Sasquatch, but it is reported to have white fur as opposed to the blacker brown fur of the Sasquatch. There's also the Chinese Yeren, which is reported to be 6 to 8 feet tall, but it has red hair in the reports that have been given for it. So that's almost kind of a mix between the skunk ape and the Sasquatch. There's also the Orang Pendek of Sumatra, which is 3 to 5 feet tall, and lives in the islands of Sumatra. And there's also the Australian Yowie. The Yowie is very varied in its reports, anywhere from 6 to 12 feet tall. Some people have reported it as having a Yahoo-type screech, which is similar to the West Virginian Yahoo. That's basically the sound it makes when it projects its voice. And then there's also the Enkidu of Mesopotamia. This comes down from the Epic of Gilgamesh. The Enkidu was created by the god Anu, and it accompanied Gilgamesh on his journey. And also there's the British Green Man, which is found depicted in many of the medieval churches of Britain and figures heavily in their folklore. That creature is typically reported as being green and basically covered in shrubberies. Most people understand the Green Man to be a manifestation of basically legends of the vegetation and the spring and basically the change of seasons. So those are just to give you an idea of some of the types of Bigfoot that are reported to exist. There's much more than that, but those are some of the main ones. Okay, so the first theory that I want to talk about exists on the flesh and blood physical entity side of the spectrum, and that is that Bigfoot is a remnant of Gigantopithecus. So basically, Gigantopithecus is the largest hominid ever known to exist. The name itself means giant ape. It lived in southern China. It was known to have lived in southern China. It was 10 feet tall and was close to 700 pounds. And this was a known creature. This actually existed. Gigantopithecus is the largest ape that has ever been known to live. It apparently went extinct around 300,000 years ago. It lived during the Pleistocene epoch, which was from 2.6 million years ago to 11.7 thousand years ago. And basically how this species was discovered is a Dutch-German paleontologist named G.H.R. von Koningswald was in China in 1935, and he found the teeth of the Gigantopithecus being sold in Chinese apothecary shops as dragon's teeth. So actually, some of the legends of dragons in China are apparently linked to the teeth of Gigantopithecus. And basically, the biggest hole in the report of Gigantopithecus being basically the answer for what Sasquatch is that it's only known to have existed in China. But some people say that it's feasible or could have been possible that Gigantopithecus traveled over the Bering Sea land bridge. And basically what the Bering Sea land bridge was is it was a bridge that was made available for travel from Russia to Canada during the Ice Age. That portion of basically the earth wasn't covered in water like it is now, and people and fauna were able to travel across it. That's how apparently the first humans to actually make the journey to North America, they went through this land bridge. And so other animals did, and some people say that possibly the Gigantopithecus could have done this as well. And I mean, that's definitely a believable theory, but what it doesn't quite answer is why is there so much other variation in the Bigfoot type creatures? I mean, I don't think that Orang Pendek necessarily would be related to this. It definitely could probably be the Alma and the North American creatures, maybe even the Yeti, but probably not the Yowie. So, I mean, I think that the Gigantopithecus theory is pretty good, but it's not entirely complete, and apparently it's extinct. So that theory rests on an extinct creature actually still being in existence. But, you know, it makes more sense than some of the more paranormal ones, I think. But I'm really not discounting any of them at this point, to be honest with you. So that's theory number one. Theory number two is that Bigfoot is actually a hominid. So hominids are basically the apes that live on Earth. Humans are one of them. Chimps, gorillas, and orangutans are other ones. And of course, humans have many hominid ancestors. And that's basically what this theory is that the the hominid ancestors of man, the theory goes, didn't die out. And basically, when Homo sapiens were taking over the world, they basically forced their the other hominids into the fringes of the land, which was the forests. And that explains why these creatures lived on, are often sighted in the forests. And basically, I think the biggest hole in this one is that it doesn't account for the size. None of the hominid ancestors were known to grow to 8 feet or 600 pounds like many of the Sasquatches that are cited are that big. So I think there might be some credence to this theory, but I don't think it's the only answer. One of these hominids that it's said to possibly be is Homo heidelbergensis. So Homo heidelbergensis was discovered in 1908 near Heidelberg, Germany. There was a mandible that was found of it, so a jawbone. Homo heidelbergensis was typically about 5'9" for males and 5'2" for females, roughly 136 pounds for males and 112 pounds for the females. And that's very much smaller than the typical Sasquatch that's been sighted, but the area that they lived in could have been tied to probably the Almas that are reported to exist today. So Homo heidelbergensis lived from 700,000 to 200,000 years ago. It was in Europe, in Asia, particularly China. So also the Yeren is possibly one of the answers for this. And in Eastern and Southern Africa, of course, that's where it would have originated from. It had a low brow ridge, a flatter face. It was the first hominid to live in colder climates, which is similar to Bigfoot. It hunted large animals and built shelters out of wood and rock. And it was one of the largest known ancient humans. So that's part of what this theory kind of rests on. But it probably, if it is any of these, the Bigfoot type creatures, it would probably be the Alma or the Yeren in China, just purely based off of the geographical location of it. Another explanation is that these Bigfoot type creatures are actually Neanderthals. The Neanderthal is our closest human relative. It lived from 400,000 years ago to 40,000 years ago, primarily in Europe and Central Asia. It had a wide middle face and a huge nose. It was shorter and stockier. So in the face, it might have looked like kind of like a Bigfoot, but in the height, it doesn't really line up. Their brain sizes were proportional to ours. So, I mean, if Bigfoot does exist, they have a giant cranial capacity, which means that they have probably a pretty large brain. Neanderthals were, they used tools. They used fire. They lived in shelters and wore clothing. And they were also skilled hunters. So those types of things kind of point to it probably not being related to Sasquatch, purely based on the fact that they wear clothing. As far as I know of, no Sasquatch sighting has been accompanied by clothing itself. Sometimes there's talk about Sasquatches actually making structures that they lived in, but generally not fire and generally not tools. So that's kind of a hole right there. They did, however, bury their dead, which possibly this might be linked to the explanation of, you know, why are we not finding the burials for Sasquatches? If they are somehow related to the Neanderthals, they could have sort of acquired that practice. The Neanderthal was discovered in 1856 in Germany, and it was named after the Neander Valley, which is where it was found. Typically, the males were 5'5" and 145 pounds, whereas the females were about 5 feet tall and 120 pounds. Again, this doesn't really line up, but just it based in Europe probably links it to the Alma the most. And there's actually a story about a Russian platoon in 1925. They went to a cave in the Caucasus Mountains and reportedly killed a hominid-type creature. So, I mean, that could have been it could have been a Neanderthal, could have been something related to Bigfoot, but I'm not going to go into that story too much in detail, but I'm sure you can find it pretty easily online. Okay, another hominid, and this one I think is actually pretty interesting, but one of the hominins is called Homo floresiensis, also known as Flores Man. So Homo floresiensis is colloquially known as the real hobbit. It is about 3'6" and 65 pounds. It was found in 2003 on Flores Island in Indonesia. Apparently, it lived from about 100,000 years ago to 50,000 years ago. And this hominid is a possible display of what's known as island dwarfism. So there's a thing called Bergman's Rule, which basically states that bigger size creatures, and I get primarily humans, live in colder environments, whereas smaller sizes are found in island environments. So it's actually evolutionarily, more to their advantage to be smaller on an island. So Homo floresiensis is reported to actually be this very, very small ape hominid type creature. And it's very similar to Orang Pendek, which is also very small and is reported to live on the island of Sumatra, which is located in Indonesia. So I think between all of these hominid theories, probably the most possible one is Orang Pendek being somehow related to Homo floresiensis. And to finish up about the theories about the hominids, there's also a new hominid that we've discovered recently, within the last 20 years at least, called Homo denisova. Homo denisova was found in the Homo denisova, which was found in the Denisova Caves of the Altai Mountains in Siberia in 2000. And if you'll remember, the Altai Mountains are also where the Alma is reported to be located. Possibly this creature is linked to the Almas, although obviously at this point in time, there's no definitive answer for that. Okay, well, that rounds out basic theories of the flesh and blood answers that have been reported. So now I'm going to go into the more kind of paranormal aspect of Bigfoot theories. So the first one that I want to talk about is Bigfoot being related to the Nephilim. So basically what the Nephilim are is that they're giants from the Bible that are imbued with otherworldly abilities. So this, once we start going into Nephilim theory, we're getting pretty deep as far as, you know, this is linked to Bible and ancient traditions and spirituality and basically abilities that are far beyond what humans are capable of doing and at times even kind of, you know, perceiving on a normal level. You know, to give you my religious background, I am not a Christian. Like, I grew up Catholic. I'm one of those people that I'm very spiritual, but I'm not, you know, linked to one specific tradition. And so, you know, when I'm talking about these biblical giants, I'm not being like, hey, this is what the Bible says, so obviously it's true. I'm just saying this is in the Bible, so it's pretty interesting. And you don't even have to get very far to learn about the Nephilim in the Bible, because in Genesis 6:4, it says that there were giants in the earth in those days and after that. So it's talking about these biblical giants, and it says that they were on earth, not just in those days, but after that, I think is one of the big parts about it. So Genesis 6:1-4 basically talks about the Nephilim. It says that they are products of copulation between divine beings and women, particularly the daughters of Adam. Some people think that there's a connection to the flood because in Genesis 6:5 is when the flood narrative starts. But basically, I don't really think if there's much of a connection to that, because in Genesis 6 through or 1 through 4, they're not really talked about in a negative light. They're copulating with humans, but they're divine beings. So I don't think that they're basically what brought the wrath of the flood onto earth, if you're looking at it through that light. But Ezekiel 32:37 talks about the fallen ones being great warriors, and that's the fallen ones is another name for the Nephilim. So they're great warriors. And in Numbers 13:33, it says, and there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. So it's saying that basically the humans looked like grasshoppers in the eyes of the giants, which are the sons of Anak. And some people think that that word Anak is actually tied to Anakin Skywalker. And there's actually some pretty interesting connections that are to be made there. But the Nephilim being these like divine beings that are imbued with these otherworldly abilities might actually lend some credence to sort of like the weirdness of some of the sightings. I mean, when people talk about their sightings in Bigfoot, they're typically not very mundane. There's oftentimes something very, very weird that's going on in the situation, almost something otherworldly. I mean, from like another dimension almost. And to carry on with kind of these biblical theories of what Bigfoot is, there's one theory that the Bigfoot are descendants of Cain. This comes primarily from Mormon folklore, but it's pretty widely discussed now. And so basically Cain had the look of a wild animal, and he was accidentally killed by Lamech because of this wild look that he had. He had the mark of Cain. And basically down the line, his descendants lived in Canaan where Goliath was. So, I mean, once you start looking at the Bible, there's all sorts of giants in it, like repeatedly. And it's very curious to why they're in there and sort of what the purpose is. And basically they're the fallen ones. They're the Nephilim. And in Canaan, the Nephilim were said to have been there. And so it's possible that Goliath himself was a Nephilim. The Book of Enoch goes into very, very detailed accounts of giants, and that it calls them there the fallen ones. And the Book of Enoch is apocryphal. It's not included in like the King James Version of the Bible, but it's a very interesting read, and it goes into very detailed accounts of these giants. And then there's also the story of Jacob and Esau might be related to this. Esau was covered in red hair, and later on there was these Edomites that lived in northern Canaan, like Goliath and the Nephilim, and Edom means red, so there's this connection to Esau. And Michelangelo's painting The Last Judgment might actually depict these Edomites underneath the caves, and they kind of look like almost like Sasquatches or like Bigfoot. So that's interesting to look into. But the basic idea behind this is that these Nephilim, these fallen ones, are operating on the quantum realm of existence. They have abilities that go beyond the mundane, you know, abilities that humans are known to possess in other animals. But since they're imbued with the spark of the divine, they're able to operate on a realm that's unseen and basically, you know, inaccessible to the mundane realm of existence. And that takes me into basically the final theory that I'm going to go into, which is basically the quantum Bigfoot. And this is kind of based off of a book by a man named Ron Moorhead called The Quantum Bigfoot. It's a really interesting read. I haven't said this yet, but I teach college English, so I am very interested in, one of the papers that I have my students write is basically they have to look into the biases that are present in sources that they're analyzing. And that's the main downside of this guy's book, is that he is basically oftentimes quoting from unreliable sources to back up his argument, and he's not acknowledging it. And there's a number of formatting errors that also kind of drives me crazy as an English teacher. But it was unpublished as far as I know, and I think that those are the main reasons why. But he does go into some pretty interesting theories, and it's basically rests on this notion that Bigfoot has access to the quantum realm. One thing that he points to is that oftentimes in these Bigfoot encounters, there's almost a mind speak going on, is what he calls it. And that's what oftentimes people refer to it as, is that they can actually hear the Bigfoot speaking into their mind. Like they're telepathically communicating. And the possible explanation for how this could happen is quantum entanglement. So quantum entanglement is basically when particles become entangled despite being separated by large distances. And so that's one of the things that's often reported in these Bigfoot sightings, is that they're spiritual in nature, you know? And quantum entanglement itself is a very spiritual thing, because it points to the interconnectedness of the universe itself. These particles are apparently separate, but they're not. They're part of the same thing. And maybe it's an understanding of that that allows the Bigfoot to operate on this level. Maybe it's something else. But, you know, for me, I wouldn't say that I experienced mind speak when I was having my kind of weird encounter, but I did feel the presence. Like, I felt like I was intertwined almost with something else. So it's something very interesting to look through. Another thing that's talked about is these Bigfoot coming through portals. And basically, portals, wormholes, are something that was postulated by Einstein. They're called Einstein-Rosen bridges. And basically what they are is that they're a bridge through space-time. And they're allowed to happen based on a unique folding of space-time itself, and a being is allowed to go from one place to another almost instantaneously based on them going through this portal, this Einstein-Rosen bridge. And that might be linked to the encounters with these orbs and them almost snapping in and out of existence. Perhaps they're manipulating some kind of interdimensional portal system. As crazy as it sounds, this is something that could exist based on quantum physics. So, I mean, what's kind of ironic about this whole situation is people will be like, oh, that's crazy. You know, a being going through portals is crazy. But then people will also, I guess, like fetishize almost Einstein's theories, but without a complete understanding of them, and be like, okay, well, Einstein-Rosen bridges exist theoretically according to Einstein's equations, but it's crazy for a being to be able to go through them. So, I mean, there's a little bit of duality of belief going on there, but I don't know. It's pretty interesting. And okay, so that's also kind of tied in. All of this is kind of tied in to quantum non-locality. And basically it's that Bigfoots are non-local creatures. I mean, in all honesty, we're non-local creatures. Humans are non-local. We're non-local beings having a local experience, but really we have access to that non-locality that you can experience during, you know, meditation or experiences of heightened awareness. You can feel your presence in the universe at large, as opposed to just being right here in this place and time. And possibly Bigfoot type creatures are able to somehow get a deeper access into their own non-locality. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious there's a lot more going on in the universe that our three-dimensional, you know, senses can actually perceive. And I mean, perhaps Bigfoot are able to tap into that hidden awareness. And basically, to go further about quantum non-locality, it's the ability of objects to instantaneously know about each other's state when separated by large distances. So you can see how that fits into basically the mind speak. It's almost as if the universe at large instantaneously arranges particles in anticipation of future events. And it shows that the separate parts of the universe are actually potentially connected in an intimate way. Another thing is that possibly Bigfoot is related to dark matter. Ron Moorhead goes into that. It's just matter that's outside of our range of perception. I mean, obviously, on the spectrum of light, we're only perceiving a very, very small amount of what's actually out there, right? Like, we're perceiving things in UV, but there's all sorts of rays that we're not seeing. And I mean, I don't know, maybe they're able to have perception that we're not able to. Another thing that Bigfoot is often reported as doing is basically cloaking, which is kind of like disappearing or turning invisible itself. And so in the Vedic traditions, there's these things called siddhis, which are essentially supernatural magical abilities that beings can have. And one of the siddhis is invisibility. So possibly, you know, the Bigfoot almost has siddhis like an Eastern yogi or something like that. But that's basically it for the quantum theories. Just remember, energy can't be created or destroyed. It can only change from one thing to another. And so maybe these Bigfoot are tied into, you know, like string theory, and that they've consumed themselves into the never-ending energy of the universe. Well, to leave you, I don't know. I don't really know what Bigfoot is, you know. Probably my theory is that it's kind of a mix between Gigantopithecus and the hominids. That, if I had a gun to my head, that would be probably my answer. But honestly, I think that there might be some kind of something quantum going on with these creatures, something beyond the normal, perhaps, that we don't quite understand yet. But really, I think based on the variation of how they're described and how they're reported and the things that are reported to actually have happened in the experiences, I think it's a mix. I don't think that there's really one answer for what Bigfoot is. And hopefully someday we'll find out. So until then, I'll just be fascinated by the subject and I'll keep on researching it. Probably down the line, I'll have more Bigfoot episodes for you. But until then, we'll just hopefully people keep on having encounters, and maybe one day we'll have an answer. All right, we'll see you next time.